From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman and hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 4, recorded Monday, January 30th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Automated QA, makers of Test Complete, providing automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications, online at www.automatedqa.com. And by peterbloom.com, start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at www.peterbloom.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine, online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott focuses on continuous integration, highlighting nearly 20 tools that you can use today to help automate the test and build process.
Hey, this is Carl Franklin. Hope you're having a good Wednesday. This is Hansel Minutes show number 4, and I'm here with Scott Hanselman again. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Carl. How's it going?
Well, I'm doing okay. How are you this week?
Oh, you know, I am just got the grind. It's the daily grind here at Carilion Corporation. So I'm sitting here up in the executive row, and everyone's gone home at Carilion, and just listening to the hum of the build servers.
So we're doing something a little different this week, right? We're not focusing on so many different things. You're going to get in a little bit in depth in one particular technology.
Yeah, there's something called continuous integration that we practice here at Carilion that I'm a big fan of, and a number of people have emailed me saying that they thought it'd be cool if we did a continuous integration specific show. And since everyone knows that I'm tools focused, and I wanted to find a balance that was somewhere between rattling off a bunch of different tools and really putting it into a larger story arc. And continuous integration is one of those things that you put a bunch of tools together to make something really amazing happen within your organization.
Okay. Before we do that, though, we have some other things you want to talk about, in starting with Reveal. What's Reveal?
Yeah. So, before we do continuous integration, a couple fun things. Reveal being the first. This is just a really bizarre but cool piece of eye candy for Firefox. This is a basically like Expose. If you're familiar with Expose, when you push F9 on a Macintosh, the windows all shrink down to tiny little thumbnails. This is a tiny little thumbnail Expose clone for Firefox. So, you know, Firefox is known for its tabbed browsing, and this makes little thumbnails of all of the different sites that you're currently viewing in all of your different tabs float over the top of your current site. So, you know, personally, like right now, I've got 14 tabs in Firefox, and I can kind of figure out which one is which, but with Reveal, I can hit F2, and it'll bring up a whole screen full of thumbnails of the actual pages that I'm actually looking at. So then I can click on them and go there. It's kind of cool. It's at shrinkster.com/BMC.
I noticed that it requires the latest version of Firefox. It isn't going to install in mine. I just tried it.
Firefox 1.5 is pretty much the one that folks are moving towards right now. This was done as a piece of eye candy for a contest for making extensions in Firefox 1.5.
Great.
Yeah. The other thing is that the inimitable Clemens Vasters, who has recently, of course, everyone knows, moved to Redmond and is going to work for Microsoft, is doing some pretty crazy stuff. You know, he always is trying to make Indigo dance, and he's concerned he's not going to be able to watch German television when he's in Redmond. So he has figured out a way to basically take a machine running Beyond TV. Beyond TV is an inexpensive media center replacement. If you've got an old Hopage card or any kind of PCI TV card, you can slap this into a machine, spend $50, and get Beyond TV from Snapstream running on your system, and you can watch TV. He's going to take a machine, he's going to put it in his dad's closet, and he's going to run the Indigo server stuff on that machine and basically remote, using Windows Media Player, an entire Windows Media-like Ajax experience all the way to his house in Seattle. Hmm. So he'll be sitting there watching, you know, 35 channels of German TV, doing his own thing, and he's going to release the code to that to the world. Now, this is very much a demo, and it was written, you know, for Clemens by Clemens. So the audience is the set of all people who are Clemens.
Right.
But reading Clemens code as someone who's working on DOS blog, which is inherited from Clemens, is always a treat. He's, you always learn something when you read his code, and you can check that stuff out at shrinkster.com/BM4.
Now, the streaming stuff is just all in Media Player and all that, but what he's done is added the control layer. Is that what basically this is?
Right. Well, Beyond TV has a server component written in ASP.NET and a series of COM components that you can use to make the instance of Beyond TV kind of dance. And what he's done is he is remotely controlling the instance of Beyond TV. So yeah. He's basically using their abstraction layer on the hardware.
Yeah.
And then basically creating Indigo endpoints to make that whole interface appear within Media Player.
Very nice.
The thing that's most significant about that is that you don't need client software to make this work. This is all done through Media Player. So there's no zero install.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff.
All right, so let's get into continuous integration. Why don't you start by telling us what this is?
So continuous integration is a concept that came from a paper that Martin Fowler wrote along with a guy named Matthew Fommel from ThoughtWorks. Martin Fowler is the chief scientist at ThoughtWorks. And Martin Fowler uses the term continuous integration within the larger extreme programming or XP series of practices. And continuous integration is something that's been around for a long time, but people really never put a name on it. It is the automation of a daily build, the formalization of that process, keeping a single place where all source code lives so that everyone can always go to the exact same place to get the current source for the current and any previous version. It's automating the build, but it's also automating the testing so that you can run the tests on the entire suite at any time.
Wow.
And that an executable would pop out at the end. So the ideal continuous integration environment, in my opinion and in many people's opinion, would be a developer, say at Corellian, for example, sits down, he checks out his code from, in our case, we use CVS, but this could be done in any source code system, checks out his code, goes out to the command line, and he types build. And he gets a complete build that is totally tested on the spot. And if he says something like build space install, it'll actually pop out an MSI installer and he's completely set up. I can do this in a repeatable fashion on any machine. He can make changes to the code, check it in, and a build server dedicated to this task would automatically run the build upon his check-in. Now, there's some arguments that you do these things on a schedule or you do it on a check-in. For us at Corellian, we kind of do a combination. Every single time someone checks in, a server on the other end starts watching and says, all right, I'm going to kick off a build. Someone just checks something in, I'm going to kick off a build, but I'll wait 10 minutes just in case there's other things coming. Because, you know, when you do a check-in, you might have a couple of things batched up. You do a little check-in.
Right.
So it's not going to kick off a build every single check-in. But once a batch of things has been checked in and nothing's happened for, say, 10 minutes, it says, all right, something dramatic has happened. I'm going to run a build. I'm going to test the build. I'll build an install, and I'll send a report to the entire team.
How long typically does that process take for you guys?
For us, using a big project, we've got one that takes as much as an hour, but for a smaller project, it can take between 10 and 20 minutes.
And is it easy to interrupt? Like, let's say you actually did want to add something else and you knew that it was going to break?
So if you, that's a good point. So if you check something in and you knew that it would break the build, if you didn't check it in within that first 10-minute window, you're out of luck. You'll get a broken build. But the build would be fixed upon your immediate next check-in. So
right.
We have literally dozens of builds a day.
Interesting.
So there's a number of tools that you can get. The most well-known is one called Cruise Control. It's cruisecontrol.sourceforge.net. There's also some competitors, Draco at Draconet, draco.net.sourceforge.net, and Hippo, which is another old one that hasn't changed very recently, hipponet.sourceforge.net. But Cruise Control is largely thought of as being the one that is the most mature. It's the one that is managed by the ThoughtWorks guys. And this is an automated build solution and a server for .NET, written in .NET. And the final 1.0 release came out last November, although we'd been using it since version 0.7.
Very cool.
Cruise Control runs as a Windows service. You can also run it from the command line, and it will watch your source control. It'll watch your source control and check to see if anything's updated. And it works with virtually any source control. CVS, SourceSafe, Perforce, SourceGear, PVCS, StarTeam, any source control that's out there that's worth its salt will work just great. It will watch that, and when it detects that a change has occurred, then it will kick off the build. typically these builds are kicked off using something like NANT. If you've heard, you've heard of NANT, right?
Sure, yeah. It's a .NET port of ANT.
Exactly. NANT is the .NET port of ANT, which is basically make files with angle brackets.
Yeah.
It's basically all NANT is. You can get that at nant.sourceforge.net. And NANT is similar to MS Build, and there are already people on the net who are using cruise control with MS Build. So, you know, at its simplest, you could certainly kick off a batch file. But for the most part, cruise control and NANT go hand in hand. The idea is that you should be able to always check your source out, go out to the command line and type build or go or whatever.
Right.
And get a build. It needs to be that simple. So when you are doing, when you're building these NANT files, you typically build targets within them. So you'll say build all, build test, build install, so that people can hit these different targets, build debug, build release. These are all targets within the NANT file, this XML based file. And these tasks within the NANT file can be written by you or picked up from other places. So there's a task for getting source from source control. Mm. There might be a task for calling a web service or looking in the registry. Each of these tasks is associated with a specific XML element within that NANT file.
Oh, that's great. How long have you guys been using this?
We've been doing this for probably 3.5-4 years. This was one of the first things that I wanted to make happen when I got here to Carilion. We've also got a number of XP pundits, like we had Wayne Allen, who's an extreme programming expert. We had a guy named Jim Little, now Jim Shore, who worked here at Carilion, who now works elsewhere, focusing entirely on extreme programming. So we really had a nice confluence where all these people who were into this style of development came together really quickly. Mm-hmm. And then Patrick Caldwell bought a thing called an ambient orb. This is like basically a big crystal ball that would glow green or red depending on the build, the health of the build.
Oh, God.
Other people online have put together, you know, Budweiser neon signs that flash if the build is broken. The idea being that collective code ownership happens when you have an automated build.
Yeah.
If you schedule a build, you don't know how things are doing. You don't know if you're healthy. But if you can look up and see a stoplight that says red, green, yellow.
Yeah.
You know that things are good.
That's very cool.
I sounded like Christopher Walken there for a second. You know that the build is healthy.
So where does FX Comp fit into the puzzle?
So this is the thing that's so amazing about continuous integration. At its simplest, it is simply using NANT and NUnit to build and test your stuff. But what are other things you could do to really improve the quality of your software?
Yeah.
FXCOP is a rules engine. You can get it at shrinkster.com/BMB. This is a tool that Microsoft released that has rules like, properties should have camel casing, or, you know, make sure that public interfaces have words that are spelled correctly. I mean, all the kinds of things that that really go unsaid that you say should happen. You know, don't put misspelled words in public properties or anything for that matter. Or, make sure that when you're doing, COM integration, you have COM visible equals true or false. I mean, all these litany of rules that the guys that made the Microsoft base class library, the .NET base class library, followed, you get these rules as well. And then you can write them yourself. So after you build, after you test, FXCOP can be run at the command line and generate a report that tells you about all these different things about your source code. And with FXCOP, it's all done via reflection. And we've added rules, pluggable DLLs you can write yourself to check for specific things that you want to cover within your particular project. Rules about how property should be named, how fields should be done, how inheritance should work. It's totally up to you. What's great about this is that the XML that comes out, the XML report that comes out of NANT, the XML report that comes out of NUnit, and the XML report that comes out of FXCOP are all brought together automatically by the CCNet, the cruise control net. It's colloquially called CCNet, as a what's called a publisher. So you go into a file called CCNet config, and you can set up multiple publishers saying, well, I've got some XML coming from here and some XML coming from here, and I want to use these style sheets, these XSL style sheets, a lot of which come with cruise control, to build up a giant report at the end. So I'm going to take that XML that comes out of each of these different tools and turn it into a really rich, dynamic report that gets sent out to the entire team, and they
get told
how things are doing.
And that's what you need at the end of the day. Have you seen Adam Kogan's Code Auditor?
Yeah.
That we talked about on .NET Rocks last week?
Absolutely. There's lots of great tools like Atom's Auditor, FXCop Similar. Atom's works on code. FXCop works on reflection. These are the kinds of things that you might want to build in. I mean, it would be a really great thing if Atom created XML as an output of his code editor. I don't know if he does. That could then be read in and included into a report, and CCNet would automatically be able to handle that.
And by the way, code auditor is at shrinkster.com/BMD.
Cool. So if I can add NUnit, doing automated testing of course. My system, and I can do FXCop, what are some other things that I can do? Well, NUnit, of course, is a testing framework, and there's also things like MBUnit and what's the tool from Sean McCormack?
Now, the automated builds aren't going to test automatically unless you have test cases. Isn't that right? So you have to use some sort of test generation tool to begin with.
Well, not necessarily a test generation tool, but yeah, so some kind of testing methodology.
Right.
It would be silly to have things build and not know if they're healthy.
Sure.
So one of the things that happens is when you're having a build happening a dozen times a day, you get this feedback of whether someone broke the build. You start to crave this feedback of, is this a healthy product that we've made? We know it keeps building. We can look and see, oh, look, for example, the Voyager SDK, a project that I work on, has a 75% success rating on builds. That means it builds successfully, right? 3 out of 4 times. Except if a test fails, let's say it compiles, but the test fails, we count that as a failed build.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fundamental part of continuous integration because building's easy. Building a testable integrated application and popping an installer out the end is more difficult.
Right.
We can also set up where certain FXCop rules that we feel strongly about will break the build.
Hey, this is Carl Franklin. Check out Test Complete from automatedqa.com. Test Complete does automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications. It's won Jolt Awards 2 years in a row from Software Development Magazine. Even though it's been voted best testing tool, Test Complete is really affordable. It costs just a fraction of what you'd have to pay for its nearest big-name competitor. Test Complete is standards-based and extensible with a well-documented plugin API. And the test scripts use familiar languages, VBScript, JavaScript, C# script, C++ script, and even Delphi script. You choose the language that works best for your team. You don't have to buy a dozen different modules to test all your applications. Test Complete is a full test development environment. It has features like an easy-to-use Windows test recorder that auto-creates test scripts and an advanced script editor with features like syntax highlighting, code completion, and context-sensitive help. It has Test Execute, a lightweight utility for running distributed tests, and Test Recorder, a library for building tests into your application. And if you plan on using Visual Studio 2005 Team System, Test Complete integrates nicely with it and adds a new Test Complete test type. So, do yourself a favor and download a free evaluation copy of Test Complete at automatedqa.com. How often, Scott, has the process turned out a quote-unquote okay build, and then it turns out you find bugs anyway?
You know, probably half the time. I mean, you still need good QA people.
Right.
We've got some great ones here that
That's the point I wanted to make, is that, you know, all this testing framework and stuff doesn't take the place of somebody actually sitting down and going to test it manually.
Exactly. And that QA person, more and more at Carillion, is pushing that test data back into the product.
Cool. It's,
ideally, we would actually build the entire thing, do an NUnit test, which is kind of a functional test. Then we'd actually do a silent install of the product as part of the build, and then do an integration test, do an end-to-end integration test. Mm. And more we're doing that. And while NUnit does easy functional testing, there are tools like NUnit ASP and NUnit Forms. You can get those at nunitforms.sourceforge.net and nunitasp.sourceforge.net. These are extensions to NUnit that let you test WinForms, actually like push buttons and poke around on a WinForm, or test ASP.net forms. At Carillion, we've been using a tool called Water, W-A-T-I-R, web application testing in Ruby.
Hmm.
And I've got a little article up on my blog at shrinkster.com/BM8. And if you go up on my blog and search for water, W-A-T-I-R, you'll find not only stuff that I've done with water, but stuff that one of our guys at Carilion named Travis Illig has done to extend water. We've got another guy named Dustin Woodhouse who's extending water and NUnit such that this Ruby-based scripting language will actually create NUnit tests and NUnit results.
Now, a lot of people might not know what Ruby is.
Okay, so Ruby is a scripting language that a lot of people find very beautiful in its style. It feels kind of like Python. It feels kind of like Scheme. It feels kind of like C++. It's just one of those languages that feels nice in your mouth and feels nice. There's actually a fellow who did a presentation where he had no bullet points in his presentation. He had only Ruby code because he felt that the beauty of the code itself spoke enough to, you know, it's that kind of code. A gentleman named John Lamb at iunknown.com believes very strongly in the beauty of Ruby. And every once in a while, he'll have an epiphany while he's writing Ruby and then he'll post up on his blog, oh, I took these six lines of codes and turned it into that two lines of code in Ruby and I'm just enamored with Ruby today. it's that kind of a feeling. And then water is an IE, an Internet Explorer wrapper for Ruby such that you can write these kinds of tests. And then I wrote a little cheapy application called Water Maker that would basically record your experience while you're inside of IE, and it would basically write out the beginnings of a water test. And people are looking to extend that.
That's very cool. So you mentioned building installers as part of this process. What are some tools to automate that process?
So at the simplest level, of course, Visual Studio supports building installers from the DevEnv development environment itself.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of our stuff, we just actually shell out and call developmentenvironment.exe, launching the VD proj from the command line, the deployment project that comes with Visual Studio. But for the times that doesn't work, you can use a number of different tool sets. You can use command line versions of Install Shield. But since the continuous integration world and the cruise control world is so focused on getting a lot of great work done with open source tools, tools you'll often find are things like Windows Installer XML or Wix, which is sourceforge.net/project/Wix.
Or wix.sf.net.
Yeah, wix.sf.net, or the Nullsoft scriptable install system, NSIS, used to be called the PIMP. This is the tool that the guys that made Winamp used to install Winamp.
Oh, cool.
This is a very elegant installing system at nsis.sourceforge.net. These are all things that can be called from your NAMP build script and or anant, depending on, you know, some people say GIF, some people say GIF, some people say NANT, some people say anant. I don't know. If you say GIF, you've got problems.
Myself. That's a peanut butter. We've been over this.
Yeah. Totally. So, you can call these different installer makers at the end of your NAND script. And if you wanted to take it to the next level, then you would then do a remote deploy or a remote install of your application and then start doing integration testing. Some of the other things that you can stick at the end of your build, once you have the ability to do all these things, you know, that framework, are doing things like development metrics, like what's called cyclomatic complexity. Cyclomatic complexity is how many different paths through a particular function are there? Let's say that there's a function called foo, right? Takes a Boolean. So it has one input and it can be false or true. So there are two ways through that particular method. So then its complexity might be considered two. There's some papers that are written about cyclomatic complexity, and there's great tools like DevMetrics from a company called Anticipating Minds at shrinkster.com/BM9. They have a command line tool that will go through your entire source code base and tell you the complexity of your particular project at a method-by-method basis. And then you can flag things in the build and say, wow, anything that has a complexity of 10, indicating that there are 10 or more ways through this method, which is arguably a number that is greater than the amount of paths that a human could comfortably store in their head, right?
Right.
I can barely hold my phone number and my wife's phone number. I can't hold 10 different paths through some code. That would be a time to then kick out, we need to have a code review. Now, whether you choose to break the build or not is really up to you. But this is some kinds of feedback you can get that you couldn't before.
Yeah.
Another one is a tool called Simian, which is a similarity-based tool. This is actually kind of funny. It looks for copy-pasting within your source code base.
Huh.
It's at shrinkster.com/BMA. Simeon's actually written in Java, but it'll work on .NET code, and it will find places where, say, you and I are working on the same project, and I found a for loop that I really liked, copy-pasted it, but added a little bit. And it'll go and say, you know, this is suspiciously similar. I think this is a candidate for refactoring.
Yeah.
We did this on DOS blog, and I think we found something like 14 or 15% of it was just complete duplication.
Mark Miller told me once that Developer Express's refactor looks at cyclomatic complexity, and that's one of the main characteristics that it uses to determine whether refactoring is necessary.
Totally. Mark Miller being an expert on refactoring generally, with all the refactors that he put into Refactor and into CodeRush, having the nice chart and graph that you get as a toolbox within the CodeRush product is pretty powerful stuff. That's a very visceral way of finding out which function in your application kind of sucks the most.
Yep.
These are all things that you can add into your NAT build, all of which provide feedback, any one of which you can choose to fail the build on. This is too complicated. These numbers are wrong. There's too much similarity here. Whatever. None of this is meant to do anything other than promote collective ownership. So this is one of those things where the egoless programmer really kind of needs to come into play.
Yeah.
You know, if it's 5 o'clock and it's 5 o'clock on a Friday night, somebody checks some code in and they don't wait for the build to run and they just go and the build breaks. That person has to take responsibility for that, and they need to come back in because you don't know who's coming in on the weekend to work on that code.
Yep.
That's been a big part of collective code ownership here at Corellian. One of the other great things about cruise control, now that we've extended it from not just one project, but literally dozens within our company, is they've got a web-based dashboard that the manager types can look at and see all of the health, basically, of all the builds within the building. And then we just added that as a HTML web part to SharePoint. So now a manager type can go up to his SharePoint dashboard and see, green, green, green. Oh, it looks like Fred's bank hasn't built correctly in the last 3 days. I'm going to talk to their manager, see if they're having some trouble. We can't get that fixed.
Where does Visual Studio Team System fit into all of this?
Team System is the first attempt at kind of formalizing a number of practices around development. Before, I think that VisualStudio.net was a single user tool. They understood that there were more than one person working on a particular project, but the sense of collective tasks, of code coverage, of testing wasn't baked in. Things like Jamie Cansdale's testdriven.net that's been integrated into Visual Studio filled a gap that the 2002 and 2003 versions of the Visual Studio product didn't fill. Team System attempts to formalize. We understand that there's a team. We understand that there are some best practices. And this is how we think that team-based software development should work.
And all of these tools that you mentioned will integrate nicely with Team System.
Yeah. Everyone who's making these tools and working on these tools is trying to do it in such a way that they don't break anything that comes with Team System. And I think that looking at Jamie Cansdale's stuff at shrinkster.com/BM5, this is something that was released today and has something very significant in it that we should talk about. But to start with, Jamie has created a thing called testdriven.net. You can go to www.testdriven.net. And this is an add-in that you can install in Visual Studio, any version. This is significant. So, I mean, if there was a way to underline and boldface this or have people pull over their cars, you can integrate this with any version of Visual Studio, including the Express SKUs.
Wow.
Express are the free tools that you can use to have Visual Studio, VB, C#, ASP.NET development. The Express line of SKUs are free versions of Visual Studio. They're dumbed down slightly, but they're for the hobbyist. They're for the fellow who just really didn't need an MSDN license.
And great for learning.
Fantastic for learning. All of our coding for fun stuff up at msdn.com/codingforfun is done entirely with the Express SKUs. They're small downloads. They won't hurt your machine. They don't have the full MSDN help. They use the online version instead. And, doing testing, doing test-driven development typically has meant using the NUnit GUI or NUnit console tools as a separate thing that you would shell out to. Jamie's stuff at shrinkster.com/BM5, now released today, will integrate with the Express tools. You can right-click within a function and say, run test on that function.
This is testdriven.net we're still talking about.
This is testdriven.net, and I just truly cannot say enough nice things about testdriven.net. But the thing that's the most powerful is the thing that we haven't mentioned yet too much is this concept of code coverage. We touched a little bit on it when we were talking about cyclomatic complexity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that there's two ways through a particular function. Then arguably there needs to be two different test cases to test both of those if we were to have 100% coverage.
Yeah.
There's a tool called ncover, ncover.org, ncover.org, and ncover runs and instruments your code while your tests are going on to find out what chunks of your code never got executed.
Wow, cool.
That produces an XML file that can then be styled by cruise control. But what's exciting about what Jamie has released is that he, along with Grant Drake, have released an ncover explorer. This is a file that reads the XML files created by the coverage tool, giving non-Visual Studio 2005 users full code coverage with squigglies, like a misspelling underneath the lines of code that did not get run. So now you can actually right-click on a method, on a project, on a code file, and say, right-click, test with coverage. Mm. It will run your tests automatically within Visual Studio and then immediately pop up the ncover explorer telling you instantly what parts of your code were not exercised.
So isn't there code coverage reporting built into Visual Studio Team System?
So there is code coverage built into versions of the 2005 Team Suite, Developer, and Tester.
Okay.
What there isn't is support for any other Visual Studio SKU. Now, what Jamie and the testdriven.net guys and Grant Drake have done is come up with code coverage integrated into every single Visual Studio SKU.
How hard are all these tools to set up and get going with? I mean, you rattled off just like a big list of tools here. Is this stuff that you can put together in an afternoon, or, you know, is this going to take some serious time?
I think, yes, both what you said is true. It is something you can get running in an afternoon in the sense of you can install cruise control. It's easy. You can make a simple NANT file that would just call Visual Studio. But there are some tools within NANT, like the solution task, that will actually read in your CS proj and run, using your CS proj as source, run a build.
Okay.
I do a lot of builds of DOSBlog that way on my own machine, and I'll be including that in our build soon. We're hoping to set up a continuous integration server for DOSBlog. So just getting NANT, cruise control, and then having it send out email of the reports is a start. Getting into doing NUnit takes a commitment. It takes a realization that testing is important. So at the very minimum, you'd want to have cruise control, NANT, and NUnit. What's great about this is it's all modular. When you want to bring in FXCOP as the organization can handle it, start introducing things like water or dev metrics. This took us really 3 years to sell to everyone, where now it's just understood. Everyone loves it and everyone wants to do it this way. But it was a hard sell to start with. So start with NANT and NUnit. Start with tools like testdriven.net that are just so easy that it's ridiculous. Even if you don't do any of the continuous integration stuff, start looking at how much easy it is to right-click within Visual Studio and say run test. Now, folks will say, oh, well, I can go into Visual Studio in the project properties, and instead of launching my executable or my DLL, I can just say launch NUnit GUI as the target executable. Sure, absolutely. You can do that. You hit F5 and you'll automatically run NUnit GUI. But this is a kind of integration that is kind of more fundamental. It makes it feel like it was part of the product the whole time. When you say right click and say run tests, down at the bottom when it pops up and it says build and you see all the build stuff go by, after that combo box in the toolbox at the bottom of Visual Studio says build, it immediately switches over to test and the results of the test come out. We're not talking about shelling out into DOS to do funky stuff.
Right.
They've got a formal integration technique with Visual Studio that's really something to be seen.
Excellent. Well, Scott, any last minute words before we go for this week?
You know, I probably missed something. There's probably another tool or an add-on to Cruise Control. I know that a lot of people have been trying to get MS Build, the 2005 MS Build stuff, working with Cruise Control. If you Google for those things, you'll find it. I'm sure that I missed someone's favorite tool. But do try to learn about continuous integration. There's a thriving community out there that are working on this kind of stuff. Once you've instituted this in your company, no matter how small your team is, it'll be really difficult to go back to anything else.
Indeed. Thank you, Scott, and we'll talk to you, the listener, next week on Hansel Minutes.